Innovative ways to fund a business startup or find the capital to expand an existing enterprise. Back in the olden days, well, even just a few years ago, there were a couple ways to fund your small business startup idea. Maybe you got a loan from your bank or borrowed money from family. Today, the number of options has exploded, and more people are turning to non-traditional funding options. Crowdfunding alone has become a huge part of the economy, with some estimates putting the amount raised from crowdfunding sites at more than $34 billion in 2015, more than twice the year before. And there are new federal laws and state regulations expanding direct investment opportunities. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss some of the new options for funding your business, their benefits and drawbacks. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Starting a business or expanding an existing one can be a daunting undertaking. One of the hardest parts is coming up with the funding. Well, today we're going to discuss some creative ways people can try and raise money, and some of them are made possible by new laws and regulations. Joining me in our studio, Kate Curran is Training and Outreach Coordinator with Coastal Enterprises Incorporated. She's a member of the Maine Startup and Create Week Executive Committee. Greg Fryer is a partner with the Verrill Dana Law Firm. During 2014, he was among those involved in the design and drafting of the Maine crowdfunding statute and associated rules. Don Gooding is the founder of Gooding Growth, LLC. He's the former executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development, both a hub and catalyst for entrepreneurship and innovation in Maine. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And as always, we want to hear from you and the audience. What questions do you have about funding a business? Have you participated in a crowdfunding raising venture such as Kickstarter or GoFundMe? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Don Gooding, today in August of 2016, what are the basic funding models for starting a new business? What are your options?
Well, I like to talk about the four colors of money for entrepreneurs, and quite often entrepreneurs, you need to avail themselves of all of those. So the first is bootstrapping, which is using your own personal financial resources plus a whole bunch of techniques like getting customers to pay you before you deliver the product or service. There are many, many ways that entrepreneurs have figured out to generate cash from the business. Second is grants, people giving you money and you don't have to pay it back. Third is debt, a loan with interest. And then finally, there's equity, selling a piece of your company. And those are the basic forms of financing, but those have manifested themselves in many, many different choices. Here in the U.S., we have the most advanced financial marketplace in the world, and it's rather confusing for entrepreneurs because there are so many choices. It's hard to figure out which one is the right one for you at your stage of development.
So bootstrapping, grants, debt, equity. The biggest movement in the last few years have been in equity and grants, yes?
Well, there's really been movement across all of them. So if we're talking about crowdfunding, in fact, you can find forms of crowdfunding for each of those colors of money. Kickstarter, which is typically a customer paying you ahead of you delivering something, that's actually an internet-enabled form of bootstrapping. There are also grants, so GoFundMe, which is the number one crowdfunding site. That's pretty much people giving you grants. And then there are also what's called peer-to-peer, that's P-E-E-R, not P-I-E-R, peer-to-peer lending sites like the Lending Club that are, you know, individuals with money lending money to other individuals or companies. And then finally, the big move that's happened really in the last 2 years is on the equity side of crowdfunding.
Perfect transition to Greg Fryer. What is different now on the equity side of crowdfunding? I know you helped write the new regulations. What's possible now that wasn't even a couple years ago?
Well, there are a lot of things that are different now. This is probably the best time we've ever seen for raising capital from investors. The crowdfunding has been a new innovation. It started with a federal statute in 2012, and a bunch of states, including Maine, quickly followed suit with their own brand of crowdfunding. Just from a market standpoint, however, the rise of angel investing has been just a remarkable and extremely important source of capital for a wide range of businesses. So this is really a good time to be in business seeking capital.
Explain to those who may not know, what is the difference between an angel investor and a traditional investor?
So an angel investor is a type of traditional investor, but an angel investor typically is a wealthier investor. And these days, in the last 15, 20 years, angel investors invest in packs. They hunt in packs. It used to be that the angel investor was this sole kind-hearted person who comes out of the sky and provides capital to a business and was thought of consequently as an angel from heaven. Nowadays, angels are more like sharks, more like Shark Tank. There are groups of angels. I'm a member of Maine Angels, for example, as is Don. And these angels get together and they field different applications for funding, and they coordinate their investigations, and they negotiate sort of collectively rather than individually. So it's a really, really interesting development with significant consequences here in Maine.
How large or small of a business are you looking at as an angel investor? Are you looking at somebody who's thinking of opening a coffee shop in his or her small town, or are you looking at a different kind of small business?
So for the individual angel investor, yeah, it could be very small, or if the angel investor has deep enough pockets, it could be huge. For the angel groups, typically, you're looking at businesses that are trying to raise somewhere between maybe $75,000 and $500,000. And lately, even millions of dollars are being raised through angel groups.
Kate Curran, you work specifically with women-owned businesses. What are some of the challenges and opportunities for women-owned business startups in Maine? I know it's a really large segment of the startup population in this state, more so than in other states, I've read.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot recently, and we actually had an event about this during Maine Startup and Create Week, was surrounding access to capital for women entrepreneurs, because that is one of the greatest challenges that they face. Women are often really good at starting businesses, but struggle to grow them. So that's anywhere after like 5 to 9 employees. So we've been looking at the ways to encourage more women to get involved in angel investing, because studies have shown that the more angel investors there are that are women, the more women seeking capital will be funded.
Is it traditionally, or if you look at stats, are more angel investors men than women?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, it's a significant amount.
Why is that?
Well, there's probably a number of reasons. I think it could be cultural, generational. I think historically women were, caregivers and encouraged to pursue careers in healthcare, for example, or education. And so it's only been in the last couple decades that they've really broken into the male-dominated sectors, one of which is finance. But still, there's a lot of work to be done, because while we might be 50 or 52% of, in the financial sector, women taking up 52%
of the wealth
of jobs,
in America.
Oh, no, of jobs.
Of jobs.
But also of wealth. They hold less than 12% of C-suite or executive positions. And there are no CEOs that are women in the largest U.S. banks. So there's still a lot of work to be done there.
Okay. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages to crowdfunding? I read a statistic this morning doing research for this program that the estimate is $34 billion in crowdfunding around the world in 2015, up from $12 billion the year before or $16 billion the year before. To someone who has a business idea, boy, that sounds exciting and
fun. It does.
And you know, maybe this idea I've had for a decade now, but been afraid to do something with, this is the way for me. What do you say to someone with that big idea?
Well, just like all other forms of raising money, there's a lot of hard work. And just like if you put up a website, the world will not beat a path to your door. It does take a lot of work to have a successful crowdfunding campaign. And like a lot of other forms of financing, it actually takes around 6 months of planning. So you have to, you know, get your business ready. There's a whole art to doing the online marketing in preparation for crowdfunding and then executing for it for the 30 to 60 days that you're actually trying to raise the money. So it is absolutely the right choice for certain kinds of business. So, for example, if you have a consumer-facing product, Kickstarter can be great not only because it gets you the money, but it's customers who are validating your product idea ahead of you actually introducing it to the market. So you get a kind of a twofer. One of the limitations of angel or venture capital is, you know, there's a very high loss ratio. So just because some angel or venture capitalist has funded your business doesn't mean necessarily you have a great idea. Whereas with Kickstarter, if you raise $250,000, it means consumers really want your product. So that's the plus side. But on the downside, you are competing. It is a global competitive market. And so you really have to do your homework and do your preparation in order to have a successful crowdfunding campaign.
Greg, I understand that there are not only the new state regulations that you helped craft, but also new federal law just this year that changed the landscape for folks looking for some sort of direct investment, hoping that people will directly invest in their company. What are the changes between how it used to be and how it is now?
Well, since 1933, it's been illegal to sell securities to the general public unless you went through a very long, tedious, and expensive process of registering your offering of securities. SEC crowdfunding is a huge exception now to that. It's not huge yet in numbers, but the SEC published very detailed regulations that went into effect on May 16th. And since May 16th, we've seen 81 offerings be filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
So what do you mean by 81 offerings? What would be an example of one offering?
So 81 different companies out there in the U.S. are trying to sell a piece of their company to the general public.
To regular people.
To regular people. There's no – I mentioned angel investing before. Angel investing, typically there is a wealth requirement that qualifies you to make an investment. You have to have a net worth of $1 million or more. In crowdfunding, this is the beauty of crowdfunding. These crowdfunding offerings can be made to anyone. There are no wealth requirements. There may be upper limits on how much a given person can invest relative to the net worth, but anyone can participate.
You said 81 so far since May. It's August now. Do you expect this to explode in the near future?
I do. The SEC crowdfunding is interesting. It's built around these portals, these internet portals that are specially designed to handle this particular kind of offering to the public. 81 is actually a large number relative to what it might have been. I'm actually encouraged by this. Maine and several other states, as I mentioned earlier, have their own version of crowdfunding. Maine's rule has been in effect now about a year and a half. We have yet to see the first one be published in Maine. I note that Don mentioned Kickstarter. Kickstarter started in 2009. Our first statistics are the amount of money it raised in 2010. That was $23 million. Today, it's $1.5 billion. So it takes a while to get these things off the ground. I do expect that as some businesses see other businesses be successful in raising capital, that through this route, that others will be tempted to join it, and I do expect it to pick up.
You say no one has yet taken advantage of Maine's laws. Is there some evaluation process about Maine's new regulation about why that is, and is there an effort to maybe tweak that a little bit to make it more user-friendly?
Not in any big respect. There may be tweaks here or there on some of the requirements. I think it's really just a question of it is new. And fortunately, a lot of the alternatives, mainly through angel-type investing, are so good that there's not a huge demand for this. But I expect that once we see the first couple of them, I think it will pick up.
Kate, you've lived other places and other countries and worked with small businesses. I want to know from you what you think of Maine and the startup climate here compared to other places.
Well, I think right now, particularly Maine, there's a lot of support and energy around the entrepreneur community. And I think in the past, I don't know if that visibility and that support was necessarily there. You know, people and organizations are being a lot more intentional as far as what they're doing to help foster growth. And, you know, we're lucky in the sense that, we have access to resources and, you know, we're close to Boston, New York, 90 minutes by flight. And, you know, there's budding startup communities in both of those places. So tons of talent, access to talent pools. And the cost of living is a lot lower. So, you know, businesses that are trying to keep overhead low as startups really benefit from a rent, you know, the cost of rent, which is a quarter of what it might be in New York City.
Interesting. And Don, you're nodding away.
Well, I think we have some particular sources of financing that we punch above our weight class. So, for example, Maine Angels is the third most active angel investment group in New England. Maine Technology Institute has gotten national awards for its kind of grants and very, very low-cost loans. Slow Money Maine is the most active group of its type in the world, funding organizations that are trying to bring innovation to reoriented food production towards local. And then we have Maine Venture Fund, and then actually CEI in its particular specialty of matching tax credits with companies that can take advantage of those. They're one of the leaders in the country. So we actually have an amazing amount of financing innovation for entrepreneurs here right in Maine, as well as the proximity to both Boston and New York. And I think there is a lot of energy now that we're really starting to I think, another decade or two of significant growth in entrepreneurship here.
Kate, what kind of businesses would qualify for the CEI initiatives that you're a part of?
More specifically,
The Women's Fund that you're working on, how does somebody know that this would be the proper channel for me, that I should turn to CEI?
So we're not working on a women's fund per se. We're working with a group of women from various organizations. It's a working group that is sort of the outgrowth of this Access to Capital event and the partner event that we did on investing. But that's not a fund that would fund entrepreneurs in their business ventures. In terms of CEI, we're a mission-driven lender and investor. So we work with underserved communities and populations, and one of those being women. So if you're looking to grow or start a business, then come see us.
Okay. Well, we do have to take a break already. We'd love to hear from you. What are your questions? Have you thought about starting a business or expanding an existing business? Are you intrigued by some of these innovations in funding? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Condo Furniture by Endicott Home, offering non-toxic solutions for downsizing and living well in smaller spaces. CondoFurniture.com.
One thorny question at the Olympics: should athletes who are anatomically or genetically ambiguous be allowed to compete against women?
It's the most complicated issue in sport because it's so layered, you know? It's just so loaded. It's like every single topic here is a landmine.
Intersex athletes and the controversy around sex and sport later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Please join us. In most areas of Maine, over the air or on digital cable, you can watch not one but three Maine public television channels. In addition to our main channel, we also offer World and Create. World explores our world through many of your favorite programs, such as the NewsHour and Nova, and at different, perhaps more convenient times of the day. Create is our how-to channel, with cooking, carpentry, travel, gardening, painting, and craft programs. If you'd like more information about World or Create, including how to find them, see your experience member guide, visit mpbn.net and click on television, or call MPBN Audience Services.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, new ideas in funding for a new or existing business. With me in our studio, Kate Curran, training and outreach coordinator with Coastal Enterprises Incorporated. Greg Fryer is a partner with the Verrill Dana Law Firm and specializes in all sorts of securities and crowdfunding initiatives. Don Gooding is a founder of Gooding Growth LLC, former executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Eric Agrin. He is the owner of Fuel Restaurant in Lewiston. Eric recently announced an essay contest to pass on the restaurant and to help him establish future business startups. Hi, Eric.
Hi there.
Why did you decide upon this option, an essay contest, instead of simply putting the restaurant up for sale?
A couple different reasons. First of all, I thought it was unique, which is exciting. 10 years ago, I opened the restaurant. I bought a building and built some condos. I lived downtown Lewiston. That was kind of a unique, risky idea at the time. It's not any longer. But I think that having an essay contest for the restaurant was kind of part of my personality. Secondly, I think it makes financial sense for both myself and the potential winner. Obviously, I don't want to give my restaurant away for free, so I need some sort of revenue in passing it on. Secondly, the person that would take the restaurant over, if they win, if there is a winner of this contest, will not be strapped by financial loans and so on and so forth to help them right out of the gate, because everybody knows the restaurant business is not easy to just start up. After 10 years, it's easier, but having no debt going into the situation is a much better deal.
So when did the contest start, and how is it going?
It started the middle of July, and it ends in the middle of October. The contest is going very well. We have great exposure. We've been very fortunate in the media and social. And that's really what is hopefully going to drive our essays and number of essays.
And how are you evaluating? Do you need a minimum number of entries? And what happens if you don't get them? Do you have a plan B?
Yeah, I don't have a plan B per se, other than I'd like to have the restaurant continue. It's a successful business. It's been open for 10 years and has a great reputation out there in the market, and I'd like to keep that going. So I don't have an exact plan B other than that. And as far as the number of essays, how it works is, in my rules, I have a minimum of 8,000 entries. And that's not necessary, because in the rules it also states that I can accept a lesser amount of essays. So if I get 7,400, for example, that may be acceptable for me to take, and I can close the contest at that point and announce a winner. If I don't get to that point, if I don't get enough essays that I'm satisfied with that number, then I refund 100% of the money to all the people that applied.
Well, Eric, good luck to you. Eric Agrin is the owner of the restaurant Fuel in Lewiston. He's currently overseeing an essay contest where the winner will win the restaurant, along with a month of mentoring from Eric, a 2-bedroom condo above the restaurant, and cash cushion to get started. And Eric, we invite you to post information about the contest onto our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. We're going to move on. Yeah, we're going to move on to Constantino, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Constantino. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you today?
Great.
I'm a small veggie burger manufacturer here in Westbrook, and I'm at the crossroads. I've pushed it as far as I can for a one-person company, and I would like to ask your panel of experts, what would they suggest my next move be?
Well, you are in a typical situation that is a challenge to lots of companies, because that next stage of growth after you've been the soloist, it's a big leap. So I think actually CEI, depending on your sources of the veggies for the veggie burgers, may be an interesting possibility. If you have an idea that this could be, you know, the number one brand of veggie burgers in the United States or maybe in New England, possibly could be a fit for angel investing, but I'm guessing probably not. You may also try to, you know, friends and family are a typical source of funding for entrepreneurs. And so now that you're up and established, you may have a network of people that are appropriate. And finally, a Kickstarter, given that you have a consumer-facing product, is potentially a viable option for you. If there's something definitive that you could give to people throwing in the money, that would incent them to be a part of your growth.
Constantino, do you have a business plan for where you want to go, or are you just kind of realizing that you can't do this all alone anymore?
Well, a little of both, Jennifer. I have a pro forma statement and a business plan, but I've kind of outgrown it, so I really need to, you know, reassess where I'm at and what I'm doing.
Greg?
Constantino, I'd suggest, if you haven't already contacted them, SCORE is a fabulous organization based here in Portland with chapters around the state, and they have a number of very experienced business executives who can study a business and make suggestions on making the business more efficient, maybe possible sources of capital, maybe areas to emphasize and areas to de-emphasize. That kind of outside perspective on your veggie burger empire could be very valuable to you.
And SCORE's free, right?
Absolutely free.
As is Small Business Development Center, is the other great resource, and CEI actually manages a number of those offices.
Yeah, I don't know if you're looking for financing, but one of the great things about CEI is that we combine our financing services with technical assistance and advising, which are also free. SCORE, the SBDC, they're all great resources. So whichever fits your needs the best.
Well, Constantino, it sounds like you have some leads here because you have all sorts of extra time. But good luck to you, and hope to be eating your veggie burgers soon. We're going to move on to Belfast and Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead with your question.
I just wanted to make sure I turned off my speakerphone. I'm calling from a point of view of having started a small business here in Maine, funded by CEI years ago. And I'm a little concerned with the government getting involved in cutting down essentially the threshold for investing, simply because it sort of reminds me of the SNL crisis, where the rules were cut back for the SNLs, and immediately a lot of very crooked money and a lot of very crooked people flooded into that industry. And I think we've seen a little bit of an uptick of people putting forward Kickstarter things that they really had no possibility of delivering on. And my son is somebody who is a new college graduate and a computer programmer, has worked for some of them, which brings me to the last thing, which is simply that with new companies, you know, in the tech world anyway, a great deal of the way a company like Google got through its early cash flow crisis and its early problems was that they could award stock warrants to their employees to keep them, you know, working 14-hour days and keep them from going off and working for Microsoft. And if all of the prospective capital value of a new company is taken up by investors, that really puts the new company, the person, it puts the new company into almost a built-in cash flow crisis, which, in my experience, is what kills a majority of new companies.
Greg, do you know others who share Steve's concerns?
I do. The whole when the SEC proposed its crowdfunding rules, there were thousands of public comments about it, and a number of people expressed the same kinds of concerns Steve has of whether a person of modest means should even be permitted to invest capital. And others said how unfair it was that governmental rules made it a criminal activity to even allow people to make those kinds of decisions for their own use of money. I mean, the amount of money that someone might spend at Oxford Casino, you know, someday, should they have a right to spend that on a local startup down the street that they want to be supportive of? It has been debated. Congress and the president came down on the side of freeing up capital. And I think we do see a lot of benefits from freeing up capital, but we still need to keep an eye out for the bad apples and take appropriate action.
Yeah, and as somebody who has invested in, you know, this is high risk. And so the rule for the big pension funds and college endowments is no more than 5 or maybe 10% of the overall investment portfolio goes into this high risk, higher return potential. And so any listeners who are thinking that they might participate in equity crowdfunding, use that 5% rule for everything. So this is kind of your mad money. And you can put some in it, but do not put everything in here because it is very high risk. And the majority of these do, in fact, not return the kind of money that you want to get.
All right. Good question, Steve. Thank you. We're going to go to Christian calling from Bridgeton. Go ahead.
Hi. First, I actually wanted to say thank you very much for the folks who are doing SCORE. We worked with them a while back, and they are an outstanding resource and super helpful. But my question was more about I'm in the hospitality industry, and it's obviously it's a pretty volatile industry. You need that sort of slow money to get through the beginning few years. But I was wondering how, when I'm working on personal statements and I'm working on pitches to investors, I keep getting kind of stuck on that sounding a little cliche, being when you're writing out what you've been doing. It's I have been doing restaurants for the last 20 years, and I'd like to start doing one for myself. But it's without doing the franchising, it's kind of it's not making anybody $1 million. And I was wondering if there's any advice you can give me on finding the right fit for someone who understands that industry, but also has the ability to finance.
Well, there are a lot of investors these days who are very interested in the food industry and the restaurant industry. My advice would be to find someone who shares your passion. That's a person that person won't care what you write down on the page. He or she will care more about what comes out of your mouth and what comes out of your kitchen.
Yeah, I'd like to say that angel investors have both sides of the brain, both the angel side of the brain and the investor side of the brain. And it's not easy to identify these people who may be able to identify with your mission, with your passion, what you're trying to do in the world. But especially in a restaurant kind of business, I think you're going to find more success in that emotional appeal than in the strictly numbers side of thing because, as you recognize correctly, it's a very tough business to make a lot of money in.
Let me ask you this. I know that if a local bank, if Bangor Savings Bank or Key Bank makes a business loan, they then work with the business as a partner to help them grow their business.
Is it the same thing with angel investors? Do angel investors work with those people who they've provided funds for?
Sometimes. Certainly in Maine Angels, we've been working to have that value added. And if you are, as the caller is, shopping for an investor, it's great to be able to find somebody who can provide that kind of guidance. But just because there are lots of people in the world, and some of them may give you good advice and others may give you really bad advice. So you do have to beware as you're talking to potential investors that they have the skill set and the outlook and the experience to be able to really add value as well as the money.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Christian. Thank you for your call. We're discussing innovative ways to start up or expand your business. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do South Street Linen. Women's clothing, all in linen and made in Maine, at 5 South Street in Portland or online at southstreetlinen.com. And Casella, converting landfill gas to electricity, committed to providing clean, renewable energy for Mainers. Casella, giving resources new life.
On the next Fresh Air, Julie Klausner, creator of the Hulu series Difficult People. She and Billy Eichner star as New York comedians who are failing at becoming famous, but they're pop culture obsessives who spend a lot of time making hilarious, snarky jokes about celebrities, TV shows, movies, and theater. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have Climate One, Nuclear Power, a look at this controversial energy source and how some opinions are shifting. For decades, environmentalists battled against nuclear power, claiming it was an uncontrollable peril to the planet. Today, some of these same people are now supporting nuclear power plants as an important asset in our race to reduce the threat of climate change. That's Climate One on Nuclear Power, coming up at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about new ways to raise money for a business. With me in our studio, Kate Curran, Training and Outreach Coordinator with Coastal Enterprises Incorporated. Greg Fryer, a partner with the Verrill Dana Law Firm. 15 years he's worked with the Maine Venture Fund. Don Gooding is founder of Gooding Growth and the former executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Going up to Gouldsboro and Susan. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. Susan, are you there? Susan, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
No problem. I have a very basic Kickstarter question. I'm getting ready to start a book publishing, small book publishing company, doing some self-publishing of books I write. And a friend had suggested I look into Kickstarter for publication costs of actually producing the books. But I was wondering, you know, could I also roll into that? I'm going to need to lease software, essentially, for design, for producing the books. Is there, you know, can you ask for funding for whatever on Kickstarter? I am so new to this. Any information would be gratefully helpful.
The answer is yes. The use of proceeds, as the technical term is called, doesn't matter so much as whether or not the people who are going to be putting forth the money really like your product. So in essence, you're having customers who really want to get your book, and they're paying you ahead of you producing it. And so no matter what it takes for you to be able to put that book out, it's okay to be asking for that. One of the subtleties, though, in Kickstarter is that if you don't raise the target amount, let's call it $10,000, then you don't get any of it. So it's one of the tricks of setting a bar that's high enough that you can actually get the book out the door, but not so high that you can't have a successful campaign.
Susan, thanks for your call. And her question, Greg, reminds me that crowdfunding is a pretty broad umbrella. When we hear the expression crowdfunding, we might be talking about a Kickstarter campaign, just like Susan was talking about, a Kickstarter campaign to publish a book, to make a documentary film, to do something very concrete and discreet. But the kind of what we were talking about earlier that was crowdfunding, Greg, the new regulations are about a different kind of crowdfunding. Is this something you're likely to find online? Is there going to be a campaign online that's going to come into your Facebook feed or through your email?
It could well. I mean, taking Susan's business as an example, if the contributors to Susan's business get an advanced copy of her book, well, that's Kickstarter. That's what Don referred to as part of the bootstrapping. If instead Susan says, well, once I make a lot of money, I'm going to give you back your money three times over, then that's a sale of a security, and that's heavily regulated under state and federal law. It's that new aspect, the ability to receive back some kind of financial interest, that's what's new on the securities crowdfunding in the securities crowdfunding area, and that's what brings the possibility of people beyond angel investors participating in local businesses.
So we've heard of GoFundMe, we've heard of Kickstarter, we've heard of some of these others. Is there a similar crowdfunding platform for securities now?
There is. There are several of them, actually. I mentioned that 81 different companies have filed offerings with the SEC. And it was interesting to see who the portals were for each of these offerings. Well, there are, I didn't count them, but probably 10 or 12 different portals listed among the 81. The one that actually has gained the most clients is a company called WeFunder. But there are several others of its ilk. And the different portals charge different amounts of money to do what they do, and have other distinctions as well. And so there will be competition within the portal space to attract your business as a potential candidate for crowdfunding.
And back to the earlier question from the caller who's concerned about this, is there any kind of – does WeFunder have any kind of vetting for honesty or – intent?
There is some very basic vetting, and they can turn down a business that they just don't think is smells right to them. But just because something's accepted on WeFunder does not mean it carries the WeFunder seal of approval. WeFunder is really just it's a TV screen. Things come out through the TV screen, and they're not responsible for the content. They help display the content, but they're not responsible for the content. So you can't just judge, it's not like a Goldman Sachs offering that Goldman Sachs stands behind. It's a different animal.
Kate?
I would add that platforms or portals, rather, like WeFunder, oftentimes you'll see them requiring that a company has already received outside investment. So that's their own way of sort of trying to mitigate some risk without having to do that due diligence or vetting themselves, even though they still do when the business comes to the portal. The fact that, a company has received funding already before approaching the portal says that there's some level of, approval there that's already been made.
Yeah, part of the idea of crowdfunding is the wisdom of the crowds, that there will be some people who make it their business to figure out whether or not these online platforms are good or not. You've actually seen that already in Kickstarter, that there are some regular early buyers of Kickstarter who basically beat up the people in the first hours of a campaign to make sure that it's for real. So I think over time, you'll start to see that wisdom of the crowds. But in the meantime, it's very much the Wild West.
We have a Facebook post from Kristen. I have a feeling this is for you, Kate. I have been trying to figure out how to make my hobbies into a business. Where does one go for advice? I make chutneys, low-sugar jams, jellies, and pickles that are different from what other people offer. I also make felted sculptures, Both hobbies are farm-related. I have sheep and grow some of the vegetables and fruit I use. Where do I begin?
Well, I work with the Women's Business Center at CEI. We work with women-owned businesses and people who aspire to be business owners. And again, we do free and confidential business advising. We also have a program that we've recently launched called our Entrepreneur in Residence Program. So we connect clients with entrepreneurs that have industry-specific or area-specific expertise that might help them tackle a specific challenge or question. But I would say visit our website and make an appointment with an advisor.
All right. Good luck, Kristen. We'll move on to Barry, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Great. Hi, Jennifer. Hope you can hear me.
I can.
Perfect. So I'm just calling in. I'm the current president of the Portland Development Corporation Board, and we're in the city of Portland. And I wanted to first thank your panelists for the work that they're doing all around on job creation. And I don't have a question as much as a comment, and then I'll jump off because I know you're running short on time. But I wanted to offer the Portland Development Corporation for folks, for your listening audience, as another option to some of the great programs that the panelists have identified. The Portland Development Corporation funds and finances existing businesses and new businesses in the city, and the city of Portland has been doing it since 91, and we've got a great number of loan programs and grant programs for job creation, and would hope that folks would check us out at on the Portland, Maine .gov website and try to find opportunities to use the City of Portland's programs.
Thanks, Barry, for calling in. Don?
Yeah, it's remarkable how many small towns in Maine have these little programs kind of tucked away. So I definitely encourage everybody to talk to whoever's in charge of economic development for your town to see whether or not there are any of these interesting programs. Because kudos to the caller for marketing his program. Generally, it's not marketed very well. So there are some hidden gems and people who would actually love to get the money to work.
Can you think of any of them off the top of your head? Towns people might not even know have a development program.
Not my area of expertise,
oh, okay.
But I'm guessing that there's probably somewhere between 50 and 80 towns in Maine that have such a program.
I know I've been in discussions with one out of Millinocket, Maine, called Our Katahdin, and example of one of these dozens or hundreds of programs, community-based programs around the state.
Well, Barry, thanks so much for calling in. And I'm going to use your comment as a jumping off point because we are, as you said, short on time. I'd like to just go down our panel here and ask for, I know personally several people, and I know all of you know people who have a dream of someday starting your own business. Greg, what do you say to someone who has an idea? Where do you even start thinking about whether or not this idea might be something that could be a reality?
Well, I normally just tell them that it's very difficult for it to be a reality unless they have limitless amounts of energy. This is a very difficult, frustrating, competitive world. But there are certain kinds of people who just don't like to report to a boss. And for them, they really just need to figure it out. And there's no tried and true path. It's just effort after effort after effort, trial and error, and just being relentless.
All right. Kate, what's your advice?
Well, I would second that, but I would also say market research, market research, market research before you set out to do something that may already exist out there. And then, you know, once you've done a significant amount of market research, do everything you can to figure out if you've put all the holes in this product or this idea, tried to break it, and fail fast, and then iterate.
So when you say market research, I'm going to go back to our Facebook post from Kristen, who has the jams and jellies. Let's say all her friends and family, who she gives these to as gifts at Christmas time, say, you need to market this. You need to sell this. You have something special here. Is that enough market research, or what does she need to do next?
I would say definitely not. You know, she could do anything from sell at a town fair, do some sort of focus group. But family and friends are tricky because they can oftentimes be biased, and they love you. So they're going to probably say nicer things to you than the general public would. So any way you can figure out a way to test those products is better.
Okay. And Don, your turn. What's your advice?
Well, talk to lots of people, especially the folks at SCORE and CEI and Small Business Development Centers, who are great free resources. But talking outside of your comfort zone and talking to people who are in the distribution channel, that is, if you're not going to be just selling at a farmer's market, but you're trying to sell to stores, talk to the store owners. So talk to lots of people, be open about your idea, and also be open about what people say to you. No single person is the expert on your business, your passion, but you have to sum lots of conversations to figure out whether or not it's going to be viable.
And I know that some people out there may be cringing right now because they have an idea, but they don't want to talk to a lot of people because they're afraid somebody might steal their idea.
Well, part of the Silicon Valley meme is that ideas are worthless and execution is everything. And so although in some cases you want to talk to somebody at Verrill Dana if you've got a patentable idea, but most of the time whether or not it's successful is how well you are able to do the thousands of things involved in actually starting a business versus the idea itself. Because most of the time, the idea twists and turns and changes over time as you go out and find that, well, you didn't get it quite right at the beginning.
Okay. Well, thank you all for being here today. Kate Curran, Training and Outreach Coordinator with Coastal Enterprises. Greg Fryer, a partner with Verrill Dana Law Firm. Don Gooding, founder of Gooding Growth. He is the former executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Allie Burns answered your calls. Jonathan Woodward helped produce today's program. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Thursday on the program, join me for a look at the life of a Maine game warden. Roger Gay, who was a Maine game warden for 25 years and the co-author of his new book, best-selling author Kate Clark Flora, will be with me to talk about A Good Man with a Dog. That's the name of the book. I hope you'll tune in. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.